By listening to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, you agree to not use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician or healthcare provider for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Welcome to Conscious Fertility, the show that listens to all of your fertility questions so that you can move from fear and suffering to peace of mind and joy. My name is Lauren Brown. I'm a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm on a mission to explore all the paths to peak fertility and joyful living. It's time to learn how to be and receive so that you can create life on purpose. Welcome to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, and I have back with me Lynn Mittaggart. Lynn and I did an episode for the Conscious Talk series pre-COVID. That's how it's funny how we now date things, right? So that was a big event pre-COVID, which we did a replay, episode 58 on the Conscious Fertility Podcast. And we have Lynn back, and I kind of want to do a little official introduction, and then I'm just really excited to be chatting with you again, Lynn. So many people don't know, if you don't know about Lynn is what I consider a central authority on the new science and consciousness. She is the award-winning author of several books, and seven in particular, including the international best-selling The Intention Experiment, The Field, The Bond, and The Power of Eight are some of my favorites. And her books are now, I think, in over 30 languages. She's well known for being the architect of The Intention Experiments, which is a web-based global laboratory. And I didn't know this until recently that she was prominently featured in the plotline of Dan Brown's blockbuster, The Lost Symbol. And they even created a character based on you that ran Intention Experiments, which I thought was quite fascinating. She is a sought-after public speaker, so I'm so grateful that Lynn was able to make time to chat with us today. She's spoken on almost every continent. She's appeared in many documentaries, including What the Bleep, Down the Rabbit Hole, I Am, The Living Matrix, The Abundance Factor, The Healing Field, The One Field, and the latest and the newest is The New Galios. As co-owner and editorial director of What Doctors Don't Tell You, she publishes one of the world's most respected U.S. health magazines, now in 14 languages. What Doctors Don't Tell You has been 3 times awarded Best and Most Popular Website of the Year for Health and Well-Being and Ethical Business of the Year. And I actually want to let people know right away that her website is lynnmittaggart.com. We're going to put that in the show notes because she has courses, she has events, she has podcasts, she has a wealth of information. And in the state of the world, we need more of Lynn's material getting out there. So please check out lynnmittaggart.com. Lynn, welcome back. It's so nice to see you again.
Thank you so much for that introduction. It's great to be here with you.
So one of the things that I really resonate that I've seen in some of your writings is to heal each other is to heal the world. And in the podcast, one of the reasons I started it, and we call it the Conscious Fertility Podcast, is the external world is a reflection of your inner world. And I often say that when we heal, the planet heals. And when the planet heals, we heal. And I really wanted to learn more about, through the lens of science, what this really means. And when people come into my practice for conscious work, they're looking to manifest stuff. Like they want to have better health. They may want better finances or a new career. They're looking for love, their relationships, or maybe they have a relationship and looking for that person to change. And then obviously they're looking to have babies, some of the people we see. And I was wondering, you have approach with manifestation that you can start to share, and really how that impacts or how you look at that from an intention perspective, because I think it ties into your intention experiments and the power of eight. So can you share a little bit about how you address when people come in looking for these things to manifest, and do you have an approach to this?
Absolutely. And my basic approach is group intention, because I've seen in some of the books I've written how important community is for us. You know, we are not isolated individuals. We all talk about, hey, we're all one, but we don't really understand that and the full extent to which we are connected. We talk about that, but we don't really live it. But human beings, the science is very clear on this, need connection more than they need to breathe. And small communities, I've found, are extraordinarily healing for everyone involved. That was one of the big aha moments I had when trying to test this with the intention experiment, because at my heart, I'm actually a hard-nosed investigative reporter. That's how I started out life. I was going to put bad guys in jail. And to some extent, I did work on that. I had hidden tape recorders. We had them at the time when I first started my career. And I was chasing after lawyers who were doing baby selling and, you know, rounded up a whole bunch of them and put them in my book, The Baby Brokers, my first book. So I was going to do that. But I got involved with health and I started seeing very good studies of things like spiritual healing. And I kept wondering, well, what does this mean? If you can have a thought and send it to someone else and make them better, that undermines everything we think about how the world works. And so that began the intention experiments. So I knew a lot of scientists after publishing my book, The Field, which was in 30 languages. And I also, you know, I'd worked with and studied and interviewed a lot of frontier scientists working in consciousness research. And I also had a lot of readers around the world. So I thought if I just put them together, I can test how far we can take this, you know, whether or not we can cure cancer with our thoughts, for instance. But one of the extraordinary things that happened with the intention experiments and later the Power of Eights, a year later, I started shrinking this down, putting people in small groups, is the senders were getting affected as much as the targets. And that was the thing that absolutely amazed me. With intention experiments, I found when people were sending altruistic intention to heal something in the world, and this was particularly the case when we are doing lots of intentions to lower violence. When we saw what was going on and I surveyed them afterward, you know, we were achieving results with the targets. Every intention experiment we've done, and we've done 41 of them to date, bar four, have had positive, measurable, mostly significant effects as measured by scientists at prestigious universities like Princeton, Penn State, University of Arizona, University of California, and so forth. So that was interesting, but to me, not as interesting as what was happening with the participants. They were writing back on surveys when I surveyed them afterward that they were getting along better with everyone around them. That's what about 40% say. They were forgiving things about themselves. About half of them, 50% every single time, say they're more in love with everyone around them. They were also healing themselves. About a third reported improvements or downright healing of conditions, everything from arthritis to cancer. So that to me was extraordinary. And the same thing I could see with our Power of Eight groups when I started shrinking this down in 2008 and seeing what would happen if I put people into a small group and have them send intention to someone in the group with a health challenge or an anything challenge. All of the areas you talked about, relationships, finances, career, life purpose. And I found that, yes, I've seen thousands of healings of every variety in people's lives now since 2008 and all the Power of Eight groups I've seen. But I've also seen extraordinary things happening with the senders. It almost didn't matter whether they were senders or receivers. They were still receiving. And it's all about that. The key piece of my work is altruism, which isn't just a nice thing to do. It's an essential thing to do. People who do things for other people live longer, healthier, happier lives. So it actually reflects back on the sender. And that's what we were seeing.
I kind of want to highlight this, the idea of altruism, because when people come to do when people want to manifest stuff, often it's for self, right? And I've heard this as well from other guests that when you're looking to manifest, if your manifestation benefits more than yourself, it tends to happen faster or happen versus if it's just selfish for yourself. Has that been what you have been observing then as well? That there's this, there's something in the fabric of our universe about givers gain.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about a power of eight group, and let's say there are eight in the group, they don't have to be eight. It could be seven, it can be nine, it can be 12. But let's say they're eight. 7/8 of the time, you're doing intending for someone else. So you are intending most of the time for other people. Most of the time it's altruistic. And then the eighth time it's your turn. And so it's the giving and receiving that is extraordinary about it. And it is by its very nature altruistic. You see, when you look at the evidence on altruism, it's so clear. There's so much evidence showing that if you are ill and you help somebody else with the same illness, you're more likely to heal. If you, even if you help your neighbor with her throwing out her garbage, or you volunteer for something, you are going to benefit, and it benefits in so many ways. You are healthier, happier, live longer. A perfect example of that is one study that really convinced me. It was of two sets of people. They wanted to see how lifestyle affected immune systems. So the first group were a group that were quite affluent and had pretty much everything. They lived lives of pleasure, they said. They went on all kinds of holidays and vacations. They had loads of money in the bank. They had all of the wonderful environmental stuff, everything they wanted. When they looked at their immune systems, they found they were terrible. These people were perfect candidates for heart attack, cancer, Alzheimer's, stroke, all of the degenerative diseases. They were going to drop like flies. The other group were a group who didn't have as much materially, but were living a life of service. These people had such robust immune systems that they were going to live forever. And that to me pretty much said it all. This is one of the real dangers, I think, of the so-called self-help movement. It's all about focusing on the self. Whereas I think the quickest route to healing is focusing on the other. And many times when people in my courses are stuck, I will say to them, get off of yourself. Start intending for someone else and see what happens. And in that instance, as in many others, this woman who was desperate to get a new job, who was going through a divorce, had two young kids to support, as soon as she gets off of herself because she couldn't get a job anywhere, somebody out of nowhere calls her and offers her her dream job. And I see that repeatedly all the time. In a sense, the universe is going to reward people who, with a pure heart, get off of themselves.
You know, I got to share a short but funny story that you just triggered in my mind about get off yourself. So this must be over 15 years ago. I was frustrated and struggling with something with my work. And a colleague had come in to visit, to see the clinic. And she was in from Texas. And she was just got heard enough of my whining after 2 days and my bitching. And she said, Lauren, get the F off. She was more explicit. Get the F off yourself. And she literally said, there's a Whole Foods a couple blocks from my clinic. She goes, and there's always usually somebody sitting outside asking for food. And she said, go down to Whole Foods and go buy somebody a meal, which I did. And it just felt so good to do something for somebody else. And that did shift my energy. So you just reminded me of something from 15 years ago. So I just want to let you know, that's a power of, there's a power of two now on that one, because I had that experiment. What do you think is happening then? Because, you know, we hear, it looks like we're separate, right? But I've heard many times in reading your materials and listening to you as well, that we're not separate. There's actually a connection. So this idea of altruism, do you think this ties into this new science that we're connected? And for some of the listeners that are new to this, a lot of our listeners are like, they get this. But there are a few people there that are going to say, what are you talking about? Can you speak to both of those, please, and just share a little bit more about this interconnectedness and why maybe doing things for others as well, coming from your heart, has this benefit?
Sure. Well, we do perceive the world as a load of separate things. With us, one of those separate items. Isaac Newton described a world of very well-behaved separate things operating according to fixed laws in time and space. That's been the scientific story we've had to date. But the new science is coming forward that has shown decisively that we are not solid and stable and separate things, but vibrating packets of energy, trading energy with other vibrating packets back and forth. And that activity creates a giant quantum field of which we are a part. So we aren't actually separate, just like we're not solid and stable, even though we seem that way. But we don't experience the world that way. We experience the world in separation, as lonely people in a lonely planet, in a lonely universe. And the issue really is, a lot of people say to me, how do I enter the field? Because that's what I called that quantum field in my book, The Field. So how do I enter the field? I say, you don't have to. You're already there. The problem is you don't experience life that way. But you do in one circumstance. With power beat groups, as I say, there are small groups of eight or so who meet together and do intention for each other. Either they meet in person, and I have many groups that do, or virtually, and I have many more groups that just meet virtually on Zoom as we are right now. And what happens, and we've done brainwave studies on this, working with a team of neuroscientists at Life University. And what we discovered, to our astonishment, when we used seven groups of student volunteers, we put an EEG cap on one member of each group. It was always a sender. And we found within a very short period of time, because we only do intentions for 10 minutes, that's it. Within a minute, the parts of the brain that make us feel separate. So those are the parietal lobes that sit back here, and also the right frontal lobe that is involved with worry and doubt and negativity. The parietal lobes help us navigate through space. They tell us, this is me, this is not me. This right frontal lobe involved in worry, doubt, negativity. Those and other parts of the brain were dialed down. The activity was lower. So we assumed we were going to see brainwave signatures that looked almost identical to those of meditation. We did nothing of the sort. These looked nothing like those of meditation. These looked almost identical to work done by the University of Pennsylvania on Buddhist monks during ecstatic prayer and Sufi masters during chanting. These are brainwave signatures of somebody in a state of ecstatic oneness. So what I'm saying is, when we come together in small groups, power beat groups, we enter a state of ecstatic oneness. And it is a fast track, essentially, to the miraculous, because I believe in that state of oneness, when we actually experience what it is to be not separate, that's when miracles happen and the sending and receiving actually has extraordinary effect.
So we're tapping into, some people call it big C or super consciousness. We're tapping, I'm going to frame it this way, so you'll be comfortable to answer this. I had Dean Radin on here as a guest, and I asked him a lot of questions. And he said, eventually, if you keep asking why, we will come to I don't know, right? So I'll start with you, because I realize we're going to keep asking questions. Eventually, it's just like we observe it, we know it, but we don't know why. But what are you subscribing to? Like, you call it the field or the quantum field, consciousness. Some people call it God energy. So there's something beyond our senses that we're tapping into. And what do you call it, the field or consciousness? Are they the same to you from what you've learned?
Well, I call them the field because scientists have proven there is a field. And scientists, since the advent of quantum physics, so that's about 100 years, scientists recognized that subatomic particles aren't particles at all. They're these vibrating packets of energy, and they trade energy back and forth like an endless game of tennis. And that creates a virtual particle in the blink of an eye, less than a blink of an eye. And all of those tennis games producing all these virtual particles gives rise to this enormous field that is like, it's in the background, like a supercharged backdrop. And we are all part of that at our nethermost level. So I use the term field because I'm not projecting, I'm not theorizing. There actually is this, and it's recognized. And a number of scientists have basically said the field gives us a mechanism for understanding and rationalizing a lot of the extraordinary extra-human and extraordinary capacities that we have, like intention, like being able to affect things with our mind, like ESP, like precognition, like remote viewing. All of those things make sense when you put together the field, because this quantum field has two extraordinary properties. Number one, a subatomic particle is not really a particle. It's a wave. It's a vibrating packet of energy. It has near infinite capacity to store information. So when it bumps into another subatomic wave, it takes on its information. So to understand this, think of the Library of Congress, which has every English book ever written, every book in English ever written. If you took the Library of Congress and you put it on a subatomic wave, you could fit the whole of the Library of Congress onto a sugar cube sized wave. That's how much information it can hold. Secondly, waves go on to essentially infinity. So you have a mechanism for how we could be all connected. So I like the field, but is the field pure consciousness? That's a good question. I mean, when you get right down there, maybe there is only consciousness. But the point is, we are all part of this. We're not divisible from it. And the more we do tap into it, the more it makes sense of a lot of the so-called miracles that we experience in our lives.
I've heard it often saying that everything's either manifested or unmanifested, and you tap in, we'll call it the field, to manifest. And that when you lose your connection to this, this is when you start to feel alone and suffer, because it's an illusion that you're separate, but you've lost that, you feel like you lost that connection. And what you're talking about is a way to connect back into that field, where I would call it that you feel flow and receptivity, which feels good, and you have more ways to manifest. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that the manifest, unmanifest idea, the David Bohm idea of the implicate order and explicate order, are really interesting ideas. I think what I see and what I focus on are really what happens in a group. You know, that we were always meant to do these intentions, do these manifesting, do this prayer in a group, I think, because I see the extraordinary things happening, not simply with an individual mindset, but with a collective mindset.
So I kind of want to track a bit with this, because we've used the word intention a lot. And when I see individuals in my practice and they're looking to manifest and heal, often we talk about, you know, kind of what they're wanting to intend. And some of them don't know what they want, which I find great news, because maybe that's why they don't have it manifested what they want, because they don't have that clarity. When I think of you, Lynn, I think of you as one of the experts on intention, and I'm imagining there is a way to intend and a way not to intend. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean when you say intention, and if you can share any of the tips and also resources? Because when I was looking through your website, I think you have courses on this. So today we're not going to do the course, but I would love for you to share a little bit so we can understand what you mean by intention and what are some of the pitfalls and right ways to intend.
Okay. Intention, a lot of people think intention is the power thought I have. So I get into a meditative state, I put out that power thought, and that's the only thing the universe hears. But there's so much evidence now that we are beaming out 24/7. Our cells essentially send out information all the time through light, through electromagnetic energy, and through other kinds of vibrations. We are essentially broadcasting 24/7, and our thoughts are just another kind of this energy. So when you think about it, we've got 70 to 80,000 thoughts a day. I find with all of my students that pretty much 80% of those thoughts are negative about ourselves or others. I hate my hair today. My bum looks big in this. I hate her hair. Her bum looks big in this. And so forth and so on. Negative, negative, negative. And the world is terrible. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. You know, all of those kinds of ideas permeate us all the time. That gets sent out, and that collectively becomes our life's intention. That's also an intention. So the first tip is really to get clear on what you want, but also to broadcast positively. That's the first thing. Because you are broadcasting all the time, that's your intention. So by intention, I mean a focus on something that you want. So as you said, one of the difficulties is getting clear on what that is. And one of the things that I teach in my courses is the need to be specific. That's probably the biggest mistake people make. They will create an intention that is something like, I want love in the world. I want peace. I want $1 million or to win the lottery. They do some sort of generalization, or they throw everything they want in their life all in one big statement. So I help people to break it down and to be really specific. Why do I do that? Because we've seen in these intention experiments we've done, remember we've done 41 of them, everything from trying to make seeds grow faster to purifying water to lowering violence in war-torn or violent areas to healing someone of post-traumatic stress disorder. And 37 of them have shown measurable positive significant effects. So what we found is when we weren't clear, when we weren't focused, when we did just send love to water, nothing happened. We didn't get an outcome. When we focused on shifting it by one pH, we got an outcome. And I've seen it with individuals too, outside of the experiments with Power of Eight groups. When people are very specific about what they want, they're more likely to get it. So being specific is one big thing. And there are loads of tools to overcome negativity and doubt that don't require trying to build a barricade, about a psychic barricade around yourself. Don't need to do that. And I teach people how to visualize in a really different way. I teach people how to do mental rehearsal, just like elite athletes do. And I teach them also how to do this in a group, which supersizes the effect. All the rudimentaries of running a Power of Eight group. And there are a number of things to do it correctly. And I show people that you don't need to elaborate on this process. You don't need hours of priming. A lot of people think you got to meditate for an hour before you do this to get into the zone. I give people a few minutes of preparatory things to do as a group. And the whole process, holding the intention together, is only 10 minutes. I've only ever done intention experiments and Power of Eight groups for 10 minutes. The reason was very simple. With intention experiments, when I was first working with the scientists, first one was Dr. Gary Schwartz, the noted psychologist. We had a group of about 700 in our audience we were doing for the very first one. And we said, you know, we're doing this, putting a finger up in the air to try to figure out, well, how to do this. It had never been done before. So I said, well, how long should we hold this? And he said, well, how long do you think people who have never meditated before can hold a thought? And I thought, well, if we have people in the audience who have never meditated, I guess only 10 minutes. So we did it. And the first experiment, which was trying to change light emissions of a leaf, a very sensitive process, it worked amazingly so. So we thought 10 minutes. So we'll do it again. We replicated it with all the experiments. So when I came to do Power of Eight groups, I thought 10 minutes. And that's all we've done. And it things like this happen. I just did a talk last weekend in Ibiza in Spain. And the group there, it was a group about 200. I put them into Power of Eight groups. And there was a woman who was barely able to even move on crutches. She'd broken her leg and she had had all kinds of other problems with her leg. And she had 7 pins in her ankle. It was a mess. And doctors weren't sure she could walk again. We did the intention and she literally threw away her crutches and walked across the floor completely normally and unaided. And I've seen that. And somebody else had terrible arthritis. He got up and started dancing. I've seen this thousands of times with everything from trying to heal stage 4 cancer. We've had numerous ones that have reversed doing intention. I've seen people overcome chronic near suicidal depression. I've seen a woman who was going blind from terrible retina damage. Doctors could do nothing. She went to see loads of them. They said, you got to prepare yourself to go blind. She has 20/20 vision now. And what she did was a Power of Eight group. One big intention, boom, completely changed it. Went back to the doctors and they said, you don't have any retinal damage anymore. I've seen genetic issues, genetic illnesses, like one woman, Lisa, who was missing a crucial enzyme in her liver, and it had caused terrible liver fibrosis and a swollen spleen. She was a candidate for an eventual liver transplant. And one intention, one 10-minute intention, she felt enormous amounts of energy, went home, felt that all night, and she thought something shifted. And when she went to see a doctor some months later, they said, 2 different doctors, specialists, said, there's no liver damage. Your liver's normal. Your spleen is normal. One 10-minute intention. So I think belief is also part of it too, but it's the group process that's the key piece here, because we talked about intention being a powerful thing. Thoughts are things that affect other things. We've talked about altruism. There are group effects. When we get together in a group, there's kind of a collective effervescence, as one psychologist put it. And there's also this oneness factor, which I think is the big secret sauce. And then there's a little bit of fairy dust here. We don't really know everything about it, but miracles occur. And I see it, and I measure it, and I test it, and I witness it again and again and again.
Do you find, because as you were sharing about these healings that people experience, and people listening and go, okay, I want to do this, and they become attached, like, I'm coming for the healing. I have found in this work that when you become over-attached, it actually puts resistance into we'll call it the field. Is there a risk of that as well? Because there is this idea I want, and then there is this I need, desperation, I must have. And I'm wondering if you do anything with your groups about having that balance where you have a desire for something, you're sending the intention to it, and yet you're open to the uncertainty, unknown of how this will manifest or whether it will manifest. And I'll even add that some of the retreats I have gone to is when the people, they shared that when they get to a place where they no longer need the healing, like they just are okay with their illness, then the illness went away. And mm-hmm. So I always think of resistance. And I come from the Chinese medicine perspective that when there's resistance, we call it qi stagnation, we don't have free flow, and then disease manifests. And when we have free flow, we're healthy. And so I'm always thinking about how do we lower the resistance that we're putting out. And I often think that when we're over-attached, that could be creating resistance. Do you have any comments on that?
Sure. I mean, one of the things I teach people is, number one, don't keep intending for it. Put it out there a few times with your group and then let it go and then see what happens. And maybe come back to it later, but focus on other people. So our process kind of forces people not to be too attached.
Yeah, that's right. Because if you get off yourself, so you get to focus on what you want. And then, as you said, if you're in a group of eight, then for the next seven people, you're off yourself because you're no longer thinking about what you want. You're working on them. I like your process. It actually corrects that issue of over-attaching.
Yeah. And the other thing that happens, too, is you get very close to this group. You know, you've got a bunch of strangers who have got your back. How often do we do that in life these days? We're all so isolated. We became even more isolated after COVID and during and after COVID. So when you experience this, you know, I had a wonderful student called Jerry who took my year-long course, my Power of Eight Intention Master class during COVID. And he said at the end of it, I've had more love this year during the time of COVID than I ever have in my life, because meeting every week with my group, we put people into groups according to their time zone in my year-long course, and we have them meet every week and monitor what's happening every week, week by week by week, by, you know, it with them and with everybody else in their group. So people get really, really close. They get to know each other. It becomes like a little family. And many of these groups have gone on for years now and continue to meet week after week after week. So Jerry loved it so much. He joined the masterclass for the second year. And I said, Jerry, you're going to learn the same stuff. And he said, I don't care. I wanted more. And by the end of it, he said, I now know what love is. And I think that's the key piece here, too, is you've got these people who just care so much for you and really want, you get to the point where you really want them to achieve what they want, almost more than you want to achieve things for yourself. And that is also part of this process, too.
You know, I often think in my practice, I have a hidden agenda. So when people are coming to manifest, I teach the tools to manifest. And really what I think they are is tools on how to be present, how to tap into the field. And often people come to a place where the manifestation is fun, but it's no longer necessary to manifest things. It's more about enjoying the joy, the love that they experience through connectivity to whatever you call this, the field. And then they have that with each other. It's the, I need or I want something that brings them to the work. But the work, they have this transformation where it's no longer about really needing to manifest, and it's just developing the practice to stay present and not get caught up in separateness. This has been my experience. And that's what I like about what you're teaching, is because people will come because they want the healing, and the healing really happens when I think you start to connect to this field and with each other. We all die, right? So, but do we die with dignity? Do we die with love in our hearts or not, right? And I think that's the key, where you don't have regrets. And at the end of the day, people want to be happy. And we think it's the car, the relationship, all these things are going to make us happy. And I'm sure you know from the work you do that at the end, you get all those things. And if you don't have that connectedness inside, they don't fill you up, right? You're still not going to be happy.
No. I mean, as I said, one of the things that was really interesting to me in researching my book, The Bond, was finding out how much we need to belong. You know, we need to belong more than we need to breathe. The worst thing you can do to someone, according to the science, is to ostracize them. I mean, that's why even indigenous cultures hold ostracizing for the worst possible punishment. That's the thing they do when somebody's really misbehaved. And we find it in need, the need to, people who commit suicide oftentimes do it because of excessive individuation, as psychologists call it. They feel left out, and being left out is something that we humans cannot bear. So it's part of that connectedness and community. The science has shown that when we're part of a community, it heals us from genetic diseases. It heals us from everything from heart attacks to strokes, even the common cold. People who are part of a community live longer, healthier, happier lives too. So that connectedness is really essential. It's more essential than having stuff. And we also need to give. We need to be part of that collective all the time. And that's why I think these groups help to manifest so much.
Two things as we wrap up here is, one is I'll check out your courses because I know the start date soon. And is there a potential to do like a project through my clinic? Because I have people, because of the podcast, that do manifestation, like a power aid on fertility even. I always thought that one group together wouldn't be as good as having a group that some want babies, someone want to heal cancer, someone, like I always think it'd be nice that the group was not so heterogeneous, that it wasn't just fertility. But do you have a thought on that?
Well, mostly our people have all different kinds of, our PowerBait group have all kinds of things. You know, they have all kinds of issues. Some, you know, one person may want love, somebody else needs healing. You know, I think that works well rather than, because here's the problem. Let's say you've got nothing but fertility people. So somebody gets pregnant and somebody doesn't.
That's the triggering. That's what it triggers people,
that's
right?
The
they can't feel, they get triggered. They feel jealous. They feel guilty that they can't feel happy for them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So a diverse group would, I'll follow up with you on that. And since we talked kind of like off camera, and I thought with the few minutes that we have left to have a little fertility focus, because in the publication that you have, What Doctors Don't Tell You, I think you've had some experience around reproductive health and things that you have worked with. Can you share that with our audience as well?
Sure. So for anybody who is trying and not succeeding in having a baby or has had lots of miscarriages, there was an organization in the UK called Foresight, and their whole program was how to get healthy before you try to have a child. And they had an 89% success rate, an 89% success rate in helping people who were having fertility problems or had multiple miscarriages or had babies that were not healthy. And what they did was very simple, a simple program of cleaning up heavy metals, of looking at what supplements you needed, what you were low in, what you needed more of, whatever vitamins and minerals it was. Oftentimes it's zinc and magnesium, almost always with men in particular, but women as well, and would have you go through this cleansing and improving situation for about a year before you tried to conceive. And as I said, they had amazing success. You can find out more about it on our website, wddty.com. That stands for What Doctors Don't Tell You. I also wanted to just let people know on the intention front that we do have two things coming up. And one is a course, our foundation course called Intention Essentials. And it is a 6-session course. You have a teaching session of 5 modules. And then the 6th session, you have a 2-hour live and interactive session with me where I coach you, I put you in groups. You get to test out everything you've learned. You can find it on my website, lynnmctaggart.com. And I'm also running a retreat called Heal Your Past in an amazing place called Broughton Hall, which is the runner-up for the location for Downton Abbey. It was the second one. It's a 16th century stately home with 3,000 acres. It's a highly spiritual place. And I work with people for a whole week with my husband, Brian Hubbard, author of a book called The Untrue Story of You, and who's developed a time light protocol for healing your past. We use retro intention. We use a lot of retro time travel. And we help people heal, forgive, be grateful, and move forward. So you can find out more about both on my website, lynnmctaggart.com.
And when you say retro intention, basically things that have happened in our past, you help them heal.
Yeah, we bring people back to that time. You don't change what happens. You change your power. People get traumatized by big and small events in their past when their power is taken away from them, usually when they're small children or, you know, young adults. And so we help people take back their power in the situation. So you don't change what happens, you change your response to it. And we have a whole mechanism for doing that with retro intention. Then we also help them map a new future where they're free of that past that is holding them back. So this is, we work with people for, this is a 7-day retreat. It's in this amazing part of the Yorkshire Dales in Northern England. So you can find out more about it on lynnmctaggart.com.
Excellent. And I love to hear, I'm glad that we're kind of ending on that, because many people come in with, here's my history. And they think because that's their history, they don't have a good future because of the trauma they experience. And more we're learning that we, like you said, the event doesn't change. My wording would be how you perceive it and experience it changes. So then your reality does change in the current present because you're no longer having the same meaning or perception that you had before. You take the charge out of it.
You take the charge out of it. And for us, we take the energy out of it. We work with both Brian and myself, work with this past event as energy. And we show people how to take back their power, how to release that energy and become, as my husband puts it, time light. So we do that. And we also help people see the whole situation in the round with all kinds of exercises and experiential work. So if they understand, we'll call it the transgressor, and why that person did what they did. We also work with generational energy as well that affects people. But as you say, most of the time, this is exactly what holds people back from manifesting, that event that may have happened. And we work with people who have had horrific childhood situations. In fact, my husband had a highly abusive father, verbally abusive, who held him back in every regard. And he used his own, he created his own therapy, this time light therapy, to heal his own depression, which he did.
Yeah, in my practice, and I'm just seeing so many teachers of consciousness, which I consider you doing this and your husband as well. When we do our manifestation process, I have this step I called, my listeners have heard this multiple times, NAC, notice, accept, choose again, where we bring in tools to interrupt the story, to heal the past. We'll bring in EFT and Psych K or inner child work, but the framework of noticing it, right? Like everything that happens is neutral, and then we give it meaning. So when you believe in the story, you make it real. So first part is just to notice it, then to accept it. So not to give it to resistance. Accepting means to take up a relationship with it. And we use tools with that. So you're kind of witnessing it. It's bringing the light to the darkness. That's how the light transforms the darkness. Light is awareness, witnessing. Darkness are these uncomfortable feelings or subconscious programs that don't serve you. And then when you lower the resistance, what I think is happening when you fully can surrender to what is without judging and analyzing it, the resistance drops and you tap into presence or the field. And now there's a sense of relief. And now you have that ability to tap into potential and choose again, how do you want to be and experience in the world? And that's how I love to interrupt that story and using tools from, there's so many tools out there. But again, when I read people like yourself or listen, I see that framework of NAC everywhere now with all the great teachers and you being one of those great teachers, Lynn. You guys got to check out her website because she's got fabulous books. You've heard her talk about The Power of Eight. So that is a book as well. So check out The Power of Eight. And then on her website as well, she has podcasts and webcasts, and she has all these courses and retreats. So if you're looking for that transformation, if you're looking for that healing, if you're looking to develop tools to support your family, friends, and community, then I encourage you to check out lynnmctaggart.com's website. And last related question to the fertility side is, somebody asked the other day, because I've been sharing about the altruistic part when you do this work, if you can, like, you know, if somebody wanted to become a doctor, you know, there's the respect, the money, the coat. But if you see yourself healing people, helping people, it has a little bit more of an altruistic side of it, if that's part of your reason and you can bring that into your visualization. And somebody said, well, what's so altruistic about me wanting to have a baby? And I didn't have an answer for her, right?
Well, I think it's an act of altruism to to bring another person into this world. Once she has the baby, she'll see what altruism is, because pretty much 9/10 of your life is being out of the picture and being just the frame. Yeah. You know, as somebody put it, you're not in the picture. You're not the center of the picture anymore. You're just the frame. Yeah. You are giving to a little being all the time. So she will find it out.
Yeah. I'll help her remind that, because the only time that I ever, I'll use the word correct, but when I ask, I always ask why behind what they want to get the feeling. And when they want a baby, I ask why. And usually it's they want to love something, you know, that unconditional love. I heard it once or twice where alarm bells go off, where they say, I want something to love me. And I share mm-hmm. with them that it's a one-way street. Your job is to love your baby, but it's not your baby's job to love you.
And, no.
I go, you have parents, right? And they go, yeah. I go, you love them all the time? I guarantee you they love you all the time.
But, yeah, exactly. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. Yes. So. And, you know, one other thing, too, I meant to say, just on a tactical thing, aside from the diet and supplements route, acupuncture has really, we had a woman in my, in our office who couldn't get, she had a multiple miscarriages and it was so sad. She'd hit 40 and she had had a miscarriage, and I sent her to my acupuncturist, who actually got my first labor going. You know, I had a 10-month pregnancy, and just, but I had a natural obstetrician who's so wonderful. And this, I went to my acupuncturist and just said, can you start this labor? And he said, sure. And got me some electrode acupuncture, and boom, within a few hours. And the same thing with this woman in our office. I sent her to him for something else related to the miscarriage, but he had become a fertility specialist, and he gave her some treatments, and bam, she got pregnant and has a little baby now.
Yeah, well, I liked that you shared about the heavy metals and detox, because at our practice, we use the term nourish the soil before you plant the seed. And
yeah.
The idea is cleaning up your diet. We do supplements. We do herbs, acupuncture, low-level laser therapy. And then often the mind-body stuff to clean out the negative vibrations, that, you know, the stress. And that creates an environment. And you mentioned it's about a year, but if you can have that balanced environment for 100 days, that's follicular genesis. So the ovulation a woman has, the quality of that egg, if the peak potential of its fertility, is determined based on the 100 days before. So we can clean out the diet, supplements, all that, and then they're healthy for those next 100 days, you're going to impact the egg quality. So
Definitely.
And the acupuncture is a big part of that. So
great. Oh, good. Good.
Thanks, Lynn.
Keep the faith. I guess we're in for a little bit of a bumpy ride now, but my favorite, I'll close with a hilarious Trump comment. He did I hope you saw that he had the tomb of the unknown podiatrist, and he was championing over the weekend, for I guess Memorial Day, the podiatrist who had signed up that he had flat feet, you know, who just got him out of serving for Vietnam. And he said, and those kinds of doctors were really risking losing their licenses. So he said, he gave everything so that I could give nothing.
And did he say that?
He did.
That's how crazy the world is. That's how crazy.
And
he can say that out loud.
He probably got applause. So I love that.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining me today on the Conscious Fertility Podcast.
It's been a delight to be here with you. Thank you.
If you're looking for support to grow your family, contact AccuBalance Wellness Center. At AccuBalance, they help you reach your peak fertility potential through their integrative approach, using low-level laser therapy, fertility acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine. Download the AccuBalance Fertility Diet and Dr. Brown's video for mastering manifestation and clearing subconscious blocks. Go to AccuBalance.ca. That's acubalance.ca.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Fertility, the show that helps you receive life on purpose. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show and join the community of women and men on their path to peak fertility and choosing to live consciously on purpose. I would love to continue this conversation with you, so please direct message me on Instagram at Lauren Brown Official. That's Instagram, Lauren Brown Official. Or you can visit my websites, laurenbrown.com and acubalance.ca. Until the next episode, stay curious, and for a few moments, bring your awareness to your heart center and breathe.